This is The Takeaway with Melissa Harris-Perry from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
These situations, without a more concerted effort from the international community, will make that virtually every man, woman, and child in Afghanistan could face acute poverty.
You're listening to an urgent plea from the United Nations Secretary General about the serious and swiftly deteriorating situation in Afghanistan. In August, the last U.S. soldier to leave Afghanistan boarded a cargo plane in Kabul and abandoned a country as our nation departed from a place we'd occupied for two decades, leaving behind the Taliban to rule. 5 months later, the United Nations estimates approximately 22 million people in Afghanistan are experiencing starvation as they desperately wait for humanitarian aid. That's more than half the Afghan population. And the choices they face are not familiar to us as Americans. These are not choices between keeping the lights on or buying food. These are far more horrifying.
Babies being sold to feed their siblings. Freezing health facilities, overflowing with malnourished children. People burning their possessions to keep warm.
A core reason for this suffering is the U.S. policy of sanctions against the Taliban, which abruptly eliminated the primary support of the Afghan economy.
We are in a race against time to help the Afghan people.
Ali Latifi is a freelance reporter who's joining us from Istanbul. Ali, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
What are conditions like right now in Afghanistan?
The condition right now is that because the economy is essentially at a standstill at this point, even people who previously had some sort of a steady income, some sort of a job, now are wondering how they're going to continue to pay rent, how they're going to continue to feed their families, and are resorting to desperate measures. You know, in that story, like there was a young guy in his 20s. He was a teacher at a private school. He was a writer. He was an amateur photographer. He was everything the occupation wanted young people to be. But then, you know, once basically it ended, and once the Taliban took over and the sanctions started and the aid cutbacks came with them, things like private schools shut down. So this guy, you know, was unemployed. He was unemployed and he couldn't feed his family, and he had to resort to selling energy drinks on the streets and polishing people's shoes and, you know, saying that he would sell his books, you know, trying to find ways to sell his kidneys. Anything to just feed his family, and he's only 20 something years old.
Which means that basically for his entire life, the U.S. had been occupying the country, and yet this is only 5 months after U.S. withdrawal. How did this all happen so swiftly?
If you look at the way that the economy was handled during that 20 years of occupation, there really was no sustained effort to create a sustainable, self-sufficient economy. You know, Afghanistan is a highly agricultural country, but if you look at the last 20 years, you know, there were so many agriculture ministers, and yet none of them actually came up with a real long-term, sustainable program of how to best use Afghanistan's agricultural diversity to really be able to produce at a level where, if we couldn't export out the goods, we could at the very least use it to feed as much of our population as possible. And at the same time, essentially every segment of Afghan society was reliant on foreign aid or some kind of foreign business. You know, if you were, I was in the Emirate until the middle of September, and every time I would call a hospital in Jalalabad and Herat and Kandahar and Kunduz, in some of the biggest cities in the country. And, you know, even a month in, they would tell me, we're running out of needles, we're running out of anesthesia, we're running out of, materials to dress people's wounds. You know, these are all very basic supplies for a hospital, but it all came from abroad. You know, it was either donations or it was imports. And, you know, you can't buy the imports if you don't have the money. And a lot of the money and the funding for those hospitals came from foreign donors and from foreign countries and from foreign aid organizations. So when all of that dried up, what happened was the hospital was affected. The school was affected. Every segment of society was affected. And then, you know, these hospitals employed people. These schools employed people. And these people aren't getting paid. Either their places of work have shut down, or even if they're going back to work, they're at the very best getting paid a fraction of what they were paid, and much more likely not getting paid, still going to work, but not getting paid for it.
Okay, so here we have the UN saying, asking actually for the single largest foreign aid contribution for a single nation in history. And yet the description you just offered me, and that sort of failure over two decades to invest in local community creation of both agricultural resilience and the economy. I guess, yes, there's a humanitarian crisis. Clearly, that must be addressed first. But I'm also wondering how you're thinking about a long-term, more sustainable investment in the economy of Afghanistan so that it is not subjected to the whims of international aid in this way.
Right. And that's the issue, is that there really didn't seem to be any sort of an effort. You know, for 20 years, the whole world was in Afghanistan and they were pouring literally billions of dollars a year into the country. And yet, within essentially a day, everything came crumbling down, you know, because every, you know, I mean, I could give you examples of my own neighborhood. You know, around me were little bodegas and there were travel agencies. They were all reliant on the offices in the area, right? For like offices would buy their monthly groceries from the little bodega, right? Or they would buy plane tickets for their staff from the travel agency. But a lot of those, again, either they had foreign grants or they were part of foreign programs or they were serving NGO staff, things, all of which was put to an end by August 16th. Mm-hmm. And then again, so what happens to those businesses? Eventually they shut down and the families that they support are also now wondering how to make money. And at the same time, the average consumer, because again, they're probably not working and earning any money, are much less likely to be able to afford to keep buying, you know, food, to go out and buy new clothes or to go, you know, hang out somewhere, you know. And these are people who had, as I said, fairly steady incomes, fairly reliable incomes. Now, you know, the poorest of the poor have always been poor in Afghanistan, including during the last 20 years. But now even the people who had managed to rise up are essentially now they're wondering, what are they going to do when their money runs out? And for a lot of them, it either already has run out or it's very close to running out at this point.
Ali Latifi is a freelance reporter who's written for Business Insider on precisely this topic. Please take the time to go to thetakeaway.org and read his piece. Thanks so much for joining us, Ali.
Thank you.